This is the first full day of our March 2013 session. Welcome to guests who have come for Teisho. Great is the matter of birth and death. Life slips quickly by. Time waits for no one. Wake up! Wake up! Don't waste a moment. You may have noticed these words on the pillar opposite the lower zendo, what we are now using as a dorm for Sesshin. They are traditionally found at the zendo entrance. And the Chinese words are cast on our densho, birth, death, great matter. Why do we practice? Why do we come to Sesshin? Why are we sitting here, some of us for a few days, some of us for a week? What has brought us to this practice? It's always a good question to ponder for a bit. The classical answer to that question is the great matter of birth and death. Certainly, there is nothing that has more significance in our lives than the fact that one day it will all end. All things pass quickly away, thus the great urgency of resolving this question. Case number 41 in the Blue Cliff record. Zhao Zhou asked Tozu, "How is it when a man who has died the great death returns to life?" Tozu said, "You should not go by night. Wait for the light of day and come." Following the death of his teacher, Nanchuan, Zhao Zhou, after the obligatory 3-year mourning period, embarked on a 20-year pilgrimage throughout the length and breadth of ancient China. He met all sorts of masters and monks, and each encounter was one more step in the refining of his understanding. At age 80, he settled at Guanyin Monastery in the city of Zhaozhou, from which he took his name. Not a lot is known about Tozu Datong. The lineage chart places him in the third generation of Shertou. He apparently also wandered quite a bit before building himself a grass hut on Mount Tozu. Even though Zhao Zhou is some 40 years older than Tozu, in this case it is Zhao Zhou who is the guest and Tozu the host. We're not told exactly when this encounter happened. It might have been at the very end of Zhao Zhou's period of wandering. In any case, Zhao Zhou sought out Tozu. And Zhao Zhou asked, "How is it when a man who has died the great death returns to life?" This question of Zhao Zhou's is not typical of the master. When did Zhao Zhou ever get caught up in notions of good and bad, enlightenment and ignorance, life and death? There are many deaths in our mythology, or rather, there are many ways to think about death, to imagine death. There is the great death, what some people think of as enlightenment. There is the abstract death, that one in the far distant future about which we usually think, "Oh, I know I'll die someday, but..." Then there is the imminent death, the "Oh my God" one that happens today, tomorrow, or in a week or so. There's nothing like a frightening diagnosis or impending major surgery to bring death and thoughts of immediate death down on you like a wall. Dr. Johnson said, "Depend on it, sir. When a man knows he is to be hanged in a fortnight, it concentrates his mind wonderfully." And yet we come to Sesshin in order to die to the self. But is this great death that we yammer on about any different from death from old age? A heart attack? Cancer? Is there a real death aside from the great death? Is there one death from which you return to life and one from which you don't? Like just about all of us, I've had surgery where I've been put under a general anesthetic. And I was always quite certain that it would be temporary. And it has been, so far. But this last procedure of some weeks ago, knowing that my heart would be stopped and I would be on a heart-lung machine for a few hours, I had to wonder, when they wheeled me into the operating room and the anesthesiologist got ready to push the plunger and that giddiness hit, will this be my last moments of conscious life? And at the same time, I still cherish the hope, the deep, abiding, unjustified assumption that this self, this I, will somehow go on. We go to bed at night and sleep in order to knit up the raveled sleeve of care. Or as most of us have experienced, if we have surgery, we go under a general anesthetic because we don't want to experience the pain or the trauma. Or for some of us, we try to drink or drug ourselves into oblivion for a while. And what do all these have in common? We wake up. Or at least we expect to wake up. And we expect to be okay. The same person as before, but maybe with fewer wisdom teeth or whatever. There is in the back of our minds that, oh, well, this will only be temporary. I'll see you at the other end. And what about now in Sesshin? Are we going into Sesshin with the notion of dropping away body and mind and then we somehow return to life next Saturday? If you practice like that, you will not get very far. To practice this Dharma, you have to be willing to lose your life, literally and permanently. Are you willing? Are you willing to let go of body and mind with no thought of ever returning? You must practice knowing that there is no other end. To die expecting to return is not to die at all. If there is truly no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, and so forth, then who is left to return? Carlos Castaneda describes death as always to our left and at arm's length. Montaigne says, "Where death waits for us is uncertain. Let us look for him everywhere." I have a problem with this kind of thinking. It leads to obsession with something that is completely out of our control, with death as other, a calamity waiting in the wings. We wait, wonder, fear, look around for this other death. Death is not out there looking over your left shoulder. There is no need to look anywhere. You are, at this very moment, dead. You are death itself. A dead person has no concerns about past or future. A dead person harbors no thoughts, no desires, no dislikes, no judgments of any kind. A dead person has no fear of anything. Can a dead person fear death? A dead person makes no distinctions between life and death. A dead person is totally present in the moment, totally present as the moment. There's that famous, wonderful celebration in Mexico, Days of the Dead. I recently bought a book entitled The Day of the Dead. It's a collection of prints, some simple and crude, some very elaborate, all depicting corpses, skeletons, celebrating, drinking, dancing, dressing up, driving cars, riding bicycles, and generally having a high old time. There are those, particularly in this culture, who are puzzled by what seems to be an obsession with death. In The Labyrinth of Solitude, Octavio Paz writes, "The cult of life, if it is truly profound and total, is also the cult of death, because the two are inseparable. A civilization that denies death ends by denying life." By celebrating death, by embracing death, we at the same time embrace life. If you practice your death, live your death, you practice and live your life. But be careful here. This is not about the imaginary afterlife of a folk religion. If we speak to our ancestors and departed friends as something other, with an ongoing existence outside of ourselves, we're in trouble. It's not about the dead joining with the living, nor is it about the living joining with the dead. Philip Kaplow quoted a verse fairly often. It goes, "Die while alive and be thoroughly dead. Then do what you will. All will be well." But then what is it to do what you will? After all, in death there is no you and no will. The poet Wendell Berry takes it a step further. "Willing to die, you give up your will. Keep still until, moved by what moves all else, you move." A dead person at the bottom of the ocean or of a very deep lake moves and drifts with the tides and the currents. There is no will. There are no priorities, no goals, no desires, no dislikes. To be dead is to be in complete accord. There is no returning. The arrow of time points in one direction only. Dogen says that firewood becomes ashes. Ashes do not become firewood. You are not something called alive as opposed to something called dead. Zhao Zhou asks, "How is it when a man who has died the great death returns to life?" If he were to ask me that question, I might well say, "If one has truly died, show me the one who returns to life." That might be okay. But Tozu takes another step. He says, "You should not go by night. Wait for the light of day and come." The light of day. One could say that in the light of day we return to a life in the world of time, space, and karma. But what is the real nature of this new day? When the Buddha saw the morning star, was that just another day? Was he the same as before? Was anything the same as before? In case number 46 of the Wu Men Guan, Master Shi Shuang asks, how do you step forward from the top of a 100-foot pole? And Wu Men quotes a verse. You who sit on the top of a 100-foot pole, although you have entered the way, it is not yet genuine. Take a step from the top of the pole, and the worlds of the 10 directions are your total body. He doesn't say, slide back down to the bottom where you were before. No, step forward in an entirely new direction. Step forward in all directions. If there is no returning, no waking up, who or what is it that emerges? Who steps forward? On that new day, Buddha came forth and exclaimed, wonder of wonders, all beings are whole and complete, just as they are. This is not a person speaking. There is no longer any Siddhartha Gautama. It is Buddha. The lion's roar of the Dharma, which is to say the universe. I know this sounds grandiose, but to the exact extent we die and give up the self, to that extent we come forth as Buddha, as that same lion's roar. In Sesshin we die. We go into the night. That which comes forth in daylight is not a person, but Buddha Dharma itself. And the day that dawns is a day that knows no day or night. But you as an abstract individual can never do it. You must give up your will. You must give up yourself. You must give up any notion of a little corner which is me. With every moo, with every who, with every breath, you leap from the precipice with no thought of what might or might come next. The night of death is a mystery, but so is the day of life. If we realize the mystery of one, we realize the mystery of the other, for they are not separate. The daytime of our practice and life in the world of time, space, and karma is the entryway to the nighttime of our death, and vice versa. We cycle through them again and again. Yongjia writes, many births, many deaths. I am serene in this cycle. We may not reach it in a single leap, but gradually, slowly, we eliminate false notions of past and future, self and other. It's like the waves of an incoming tide. Each one washes up on the shore. It falls back, and the next one comes up a little bit further. Likewise, the more we practice dying, this letting go, the more clearly we see the mind of time and space. That enables us to let go more, to see more, and so on in an endless process. There are leaps of intuition, of course, and they are vital steps. But the point is, the practice never ends. Notions of form and emptiness, life and death as separate characteristics begin to fade. You see what is before you, yet somehow it seems unreal. Is it real or not? What am I really seeing here? It's a very strange feeling. And yet this ambiguity is a step towards the great not knowing. But in Sesshin, results are not our concern. Do not worry about the coming of the dawn or even of the great death. Give it all up. Practice without fear, for there is no future. Practice without regret, for there is no past. Just do the practice. We study the great cycle of birth and death. One cycle is all cycles. Is there anything outside this cycle? Is there anything outside the self? Is not each one of us this great cycle of birth and death? Together with all beings, we realize the way.